Sup, freaks. This rip of RHR was brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. They produce the Cold Card Q, my favorite hardware wallet. It's got two secure enclaves. It's got a full screen, full keyboard here. As you can see, if you're watching, if you can't watch, just imagine something that looks like a BlackBerry. It allows you to create private public key pairs offline in an AirGAT fashion. You never have to connect the Cold Card Q to an internet device. You can sign transactions and PSBTs remotely in the most secure fashion. If you're a Bitcoin Power user and you're looking for the best security, go pick up a Cold Card Q and go to coinkite.com. Find the Cold Card Q there. I think you can go to coldcard.com as well. Use the code RHR for 5% off. Step up your security. Get a Cold Card Q. This rip is brought to you by our good friends at BitKey. If you have friends, family members who are newbies, they still have their Bitcoin in the exchange, help them take the first step off the exchange. BitKey makes it very easy. It's a hardware device that has a multi-sig. You have the hardware device has a key. Your mobile phone app has a key. And Block has a key in the cloud. They've designed this with trade-offs to make it very hard to lose Bitcoin. Easy to use, hard to lose. Go to bitkey.world. Use the code RHR or RHR20 at checkout to get a discount. Not sure exactly which one it is yet. Try both. Go check it out. bitkey.world. Try RHR or RHR20. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Stackwork. If you're looking for a great way to make KYC-free sats, Stackwork has bounties. Go to stackwork.ai, find their bounties page, and contribute to the bounties. You can make Bitcoin KYC free for completing the bounties. If you're a developer looking to scoop up some easy sats, go check out the bounties, contribute to them, and stack some sats. Stackwork.ai.
What's up, freaks? This rip was brought to you by our good friends at Obscura. Obscura is the first VPN that can't log your activity by design. Instead of empty promises, Obscura fully embraces the Bitcoin or don't trust verify mantra. They can't log your traffic, even if they tried. Obscura believes that user data is toxic waste. In addition to private payments via Lightning, you can sign up with an account without having to give any personal identifying information. It's a beautiful thing. It's the VPN I use every day. It's incredibly fast. You can go on streaming sites with it. They don't say, hey, you've got a VPN. It just works. Go to obscura.net. Use the code RHR25 for 25% off an annual subscription. This is an incredible deal. Obscura.net, RHR25 for 25% off an annual subscription.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Man. Fighter of the night, man. Master of karate.
I forget the words. We were just singing Day Man from It's Always Sunny. The gang does primal. Are we working?
I don't know.
Let me check.
Dude, if it was up to me, I fucking love Always Sunny. Every title would be The Gang Does Something. I don't think it's working.
Let me see if I follow RHR.
Just gotta run it live. I don't know if it's supposed to go out from RHR. Let's see, RHR.
Is it yours?
Anyway, freaks. No, it's, we always stream from RHR, but the big news of the week. Yeah, it's not working.
Hey, this is what happens when you test
your master stream. It looks like it's streaming. Which NPUB? Let's see which NPUB we got.
Yeah. I'm getting an error when I go to our typical zap.stream.
Freaks, I've been teasing it for a while, but we finally added video streaming to Primal. Very exciting moment. It's happened quicker than expected, even though about 3 weeks ago I said 2 weeks. That was not actually the internal timeline, but it sped everyone up a little bit. So shout out to the Primal team. But in proper Primal fashion, we like to build everything open and interoperable. So the current setup is that you still need to rely on the ZapStream backend to do streams. Any streams that go in through ZapStream or through the Nostr spec for live streams will be shown in Primal. We tried to do a temporary workaround because ZapStream is under an increasing DDoS, as you freaks may be aware. Kieran, actually, who's the lead maintainer of ZapStream, came out this week and speculated that it's some organization or state that's attacking him because they're sending multiple terabits per second to him constantly to DDoS his account. I don't know if that's the case, but whoever it is, we have some sophisticated haters out there trying to stop the signal. But anyway, right now, if you have Primal iOS, you are able to have a first-class video stream watching experience when ZapStream is up. And it has Zaps integrated. It has, you can make the, you know, you can reduce the video and make the video nice and small and go around and scroll and do whatever else you want to do in Primal. And we really just tried to make it a really polished experience. I think once you guys get to play around with it, you'll be pleasantly surprised, and then hopefully you can give us feedback. So iOS is available today. Web should be available next week. Android should be available the week after that. I don't know if I was supposed to say those timelines, but that is our expectation. And the Primal team continues to ship. And then sometime in the future, we will have a full streaming suite where you can actually stream from Primal as well and view in other clients. The most important thing for us is that everything we build is interoperable and open. And we will continue to do that. But our goal is to replace Twitch and YouTube, make them obsolete gradually, then suddenly we will make it happen. So if you haven't downloaded Primal, check it out in your favorite app store. We'd love to have you. Shoot the shit. Have some fun with it.
Yeah, we've been testing this out the last few days. I've been testing it out on Primal. You have too, Matt. I'm sure more than me, but it is very sleek. Who is attacking Zap.stream?
Honestly, I think it's like a Nostr native hater, to be honest. But it's kind of cool to think it's a state hater? Or an organization. Yeah, like someone within the Nostr ecosystem. For better or for worse, we have a slew of haters. Because when you ship things and you do things, you tend to stack the haters and the lovers. And it's one of the best metrics for success. But also, it'd be kind of cool if it was like, we can just spread the rumor that it's Amazon trying to stop the signal. They don't want us to compete with Twitch. I'm kind of cool with that. It's Bezos. Bezos is sitting on his yacht somewhere telling his interns to attack ZapStream.
I'm seeing it on...
Restream says it's working.
I'm seeing it on Zap.stream now. The gang goes Primal.
Are we on ZapStream?
QA.
I'm streaming to both. I'm streaming to... I'm streaming to both our hacked backend and ZapStream right now because we love you freaks and the signal cannot be stopped.
Started 5 minutes ago.
Are we live?
I'm getting,
I see the YouTube chat.
This is going on. We're testing in prod though. The audio listeners.
This is the way to do it.
What the hell are you two doing?
This is the way to do it. Build in the open. But anyway, a huge shout to Kieran. Kieran's awesome. I hope he can harden ZapStream more. He has our full support. But we will be providing an alternative at some point in the future. Because I think the more video streaming hosts or broadcasters or whatever you want to call it, because they're what send out the Nostr event and restream out the streams, the better. So we can make this thing robust and open and interoperable. But this is something we've been head down working on very aggressively. And I know you freaks have a lot of requests for a primal. Believe it or not, they're all on the list. It's a really long list. It's a list that seems to pump forever, but we're just trying to knock them all out. And we don't really like, I know it's kind of ironic because it's not working right now, but we don't like to like beta test on you too much. Like, we like to test things out significantly and then release. In this case, I will say that the actual viewing experience when the back ends are working is very nice and primal. Like, we spent a lot of time polishing it.
I can attest to that. It is beautiful.
I am I'm doing a dispatch later today. In 3.5 hours. And what did I say? At 1900 UTC.
Five Eastern, so, I believe.
Yeah, 5 Eastern. So if we don't get, hopefully we can test it out then too. And if not, we'll keep working. We'll keep working. Love you, freaks.
We love you. With that, let's get to Clark's dashboard. An update. Current price of Bitcoin is $108,540. We're dumping, getting back to 1,000 sats per dollar, 921 sats per dollar right now. Sats are on sale, sitting at a $2.16 trillion market cap. We're at block height, 912,278, which means we are currently, 970 blocks away from the next difficulty adjustment, looking like an upward adjustment of 5.9%. It's estimated to come on September 4th. So next Thursday. And I'm sure you can hear my middle child screaming in the background.
Very excited about the next difficulty adjustment.
Yes, he is. Brother, it's okay. We've got 5,398 transactions in Clark's mempool. If we go over to mempool.space, we are currently looking at 78,120 transactions in his mempool. That is because he's recognizing transactions under 1 sat per V-byte. I sort of buried the lead there. My middle son, just to give you guys some context of why it might be crazy and loudy in the background, we had our third son earlier this week. We welcomed him to the world. So it's been an incredible, chaotic week. I'm very tired, but the show must go on.
Congratulations, Marnie. Very happy for you guys.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. And it must go on because there's a lot of important stuff going on. The price is dumping. You brought this up. I haven't seen anything on Twitter. As you can imagine, I haven't been on Twitter as much this week, but looks like MSTR stockholders are getting margin called.
Not the companies. So... first off, by the way, freaks, RHR on Primal is primal.net/RHR, or you can just search RHR in the app. And Dispatch is primal.net/Citadel, but when I stream out from the Odell account. But the way the streaming works is if you follow the account, it'll pop up on the top, just like you're used to on X. It'll pop up on the top and notify you that the stream is live, or you can obviously just manually go to the profile. Onto this MSTR stuff. So like MS, it's interesting, you know, a lot of eyes have been on Saylor himself getting margin called, which I think is mostly FUD. He's like pretty conservatively leveraged. He's been pretty careful about it. And as much as he says, you know, he doesn't expect any other bear markets, like his actions kind of speak louder than words on that regard. Like he's set up for a pretty deep bear market if that happens, to not sell Bitcoin. But less so has been focused on the actual shareholders themselves. And so what we've seen over the last few weeks on MSTR is, well, for starters, he like the guidance of the shareholder meeting was that they weren't going to sell more MSTR stock to buy Bitcoin if it was under 2.5 MNAV. So if the valuation was under 2.5 times the book value of the Bitcoin, they weren't going to sell more MSTR common stock, which is what they've been doing for almost a year now in size. And then a few weeks after that, they reversed course and they said, you know, actually, we will still sell MSTR common stock at our discretion if it makes sense. And then they did, right? So on Monday, they announced that they did it again. And this whole time, what we've been watching is basically that MNAV has been compressing. So even when Bitcoin was going up, the MNAV was compressing. And now that Bitcoin's going down, it seems to be compressing even more. Right now, let me see, strategy.com. Right now, it's at 1.61 times the Bitcoin, right? So one times would be Bitcoin. But anyway, I've seen a lot of reports. And then so at the same time, so what a lot of people do with stocks they hold is they borrow against them. And if they want to really lever up, then they buy more of the stock with their borrowings. And so we've seen two things happen. First of all, there's reports that JP Morgan, they increase the margin requirements significantly if you're doing that trade. And then second of all, the price has gone down a decent amount. It's trading at what, like 337 right now, I think. Yes, 337. So I've seen a bunch of reports of MSTR shareholders being margin called, and then they're selling Bitcoin to cover their margin. And then that drives the price of Bitcoin down, which drives the price of MSTR down more, which margins more people. So we're seeing like a little bit of a vicious feedback loop right now that I think is part of the reason for this price depreciation or this recent correction or whatever the hell you want to call it to 108. Not that many people are talking about that. And this is one of the reasons why it's important to stay humble out there. And this is a long-term game. There's a lot of survivor bias, right? Like a lot of people that got into Bitcoin have gotten wrecked in the past. And the survivors are the ones who thrive. And then the second piece I'd say is like, we're just seeing across all of the paper Bitcoin stocks, they're just all getting hammered right now. And I think a lot of people are like, where's retail? Retail hasn't shown up this cycle. It's like, well, I think a lot of retail did show up and they've been wrecked on paper Bitcoin summer a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's my take.
I'm looking at Bitcoin perp future funding rates. They're not like out of hand, but they're relatively elevated. So I imagine people are trying to stop out the longs here.
Yeah,
I was saying Zero Hedge has a theory that like Jane Street and those types of Wall Street investors are actively trying to draw the price down lower to buy.
I think so too. Yeah. We're definitely got the sophisticated guys there. I mean, I would say there's some conspiracies that JP increased their margin requirements for like malicious reasons to drive the price lower on MSTR specifically. But I will say that Jamie Dimon has a reputation of being very good at managing risk. So I don't know if there's actually anything malicious there. I think he might've seen a lot of risk on their book and wanted to reduce that risk. And he's never, doesn't have that much love for Bitcoin. So why put his neck out for it? So I don't think that was actually probably malicious in that regard, but I could see how that could hit people off guard. I will say though, on the Saylor side, it's really odd what he did with the common situation because he released the preferreds. The preferreds obviously are designed to be accretive to the common. And I thought he was going to let the common run a little bit. I think a lot of people that were playing that trade thought he was going to let the common run. And so to make that guy, so the first guidance that he was like, I'm going to stop selling common actually was not surprising. Like that made a lot of sense. And then when he backed off of it, I thought maybe it was for legal reasons. Like his lawyers were like, no, you can't tell them that. You can't do guidance based on MNAV. But then they actually still sold common. Like you would think he would just let it run, give shareholders a little bit of breathing room. there's obviously a lot of angst, but yeah, like if you've been watching socials, there's a lot of angst among the shareholder class about Common getting clobbered. This is a weird move. It was a bit of a weird move. But we'll see how it plays out. But I do think it is having an effect on the greater Bitcoin market right now.
Yeah, it is a weird move in the sense that if you're going to come out after your Q2 financials, have your meeting, basically set the path for shareholders. Here's the playbook. Here's the only time we're going to hit the ATM. We're going to lean on the preferreds. And then less than a month later, you completely renege on that sort of guidance that you gave shareholders when you're one of the most heavily traded stocks in the stock market. I believe it's still top five, top 10, at the very least in terms of volume per day. It's a bit odd. Reeks of, I don't want to say desperation, but maybe a lack of confidence. Or maybe it's just like massive FOMO, like, oh, I want to tap the ATM to buy more Bitcoin. But Logan, pull up the chart.
Yeah.
Just to put this into perspective, around the numbers, if you look at the long liquidations, where we were earlier, August 25th, so 4 days ago, earlier this week, that was the, I did the counting, a little eye test here. I think that's the 16th highest liquidation rate since the beginning or the middle of 2021. It's going back about 4 years. So that's a pretty big liquidation day.
Yeah, I mean, and to the fact that we're trading still well above 100, even though that might be me jinxing it, I think is a pretty good sign of how liquid Bitcoin is right now and how relatively strong it is. I will say I see LV99 Slacker in the YouTube chat since the last chat is not working. And he's also right. Like, this is something we've I think, put a pin on many times on this show, which is there is seems to be a silent depression going on where many people are struggling while asset prices are trading at all-time highs. So that's definitely a part of it, I think. And just on the Saylor point, like, to be clear here, I think one of the things he deserves a lot of credit for is he's always been very clear and consistent on the strategy. And that's what makes the last month kind of odd. And I think is what has shaken shareholders a lot. Is that this to do such big changes so quickly. And everyone's like questioning, it's like, okay, well, what's the move? Like, what is his play here? Is out of brand for him. It's unusual for him.
How it is. Anybody participating in Paper Bitcoin Summer, beware. Be aware, be careful. Don't get over leveraged. Stay humble, stack sats.
It's a great time to stay humble and stack sats. Always.
Yes. Yes. I'm getting pinged by Ed. You see the sat? We're selling the sats. We're doing a giveaway right now. Go to the TFTC account. Find the you got 20 minutes left to retweet this if you want a free hat.
Marty should be better at shilling his shit because I get no money from this, but you can go to tftcmerch.io if you want to buy one.
Want to buy it. If you want to get it for free, you can retweet it. Oh, the Humble Enough hat came. You got a massive compliment from my wife this morning. She loves the hat.
She loves the hat?
She loves
it. It means a lot coming from her. Freaks, you know, don't sell yourselves out to retweet for a free hat. Either buy a hat or don't press retweet, but don't.
Retweet.
The minute chance that you get a free hat is not worth just blindly retweeting engagement bait.
You have a 0.5% chance of winning a hat right now. It's pretty good.
Just go buy a hat.
You have a 1 in 200 chance. Moving along,
for your lady, I changed.
Boss. This debate, it's raging. It's been raging for well over since Roger Ver was around pushing merchant adoption. Store value versus medium exchange. Bitcoin can never be used as a medium exchange.
What's your opinion here, Marty?
I mean, I think we have the same opinion. Like, you don't have one without the other, so it's both.
It's just both. It's both freaks. Good money is money that is great for spending and saving, specifically being able to do without permission. Bitcoin serves both. And if you didn't have one or the other, it would fail. So you literally need both and fight over something more interesting.
It is really, there's a lot of accounts out there saying it's only a store of value. And it, you know what really set it off this week is that clip of Dorsey on, I think, the 21 Questions podcast.
Yeah, but that's like 5 months old.
With Haley. Like, I mean, it's 5 months old, but the clip resurfaced and people...
Well, you know why it resurfaced, right?
Because of us.
And you didn't say that it was 5 months old when you posted it.
Trevor. Listen to Matt. I don't run the account.
The TOTC account posted a five-month-old clip of Dorsey saying it needs to be used as money. And it set it all off again.
Yeah. Robin Linus was hopping in.
Dorsey was retweeting things. It just became a whole thing.
Well, I think I think really to lean into, you need both. You can't have one without the other. Like, Bitcoin only has valuable, you can tell Tyron, only has value because of the fact that it's censorship resistant peer-to-peer digital cash that can be sent from peer-to-peer without permission through the distributed network. And it just so happens to have a supply cap of 21 million, which is the scarcest thing on the planet. It's the most finite thing on the planet. Somebody was diving into the semantics of this. It's very finite. And the finite nature, as demand goes up, supply stays static, price is going to go up. And there are many out there, myself included, think it is worthwhile to hold it for the long term. As demand continues to increase, it'll push the price up because supply is not elastic with the demand. Yeah. But people need to send money, better money, good money, in ways that the traditional fiat rails don't allow them. And I bought soap this week. I loaded up the soap miner. That's the other part of it. I bought 8 bars of soap. Cost me, I think, 72,000 sats. And he only accepts Bitcoin. The soap is so good. I need it. I had to spend Bitcoin. I'm sorry. Sorry if that makes me
apologize.
Blasphemous hodler.
No, look, I think, well, first of all, I do think merchant adoption will be heavily influenced by merchants that only accept Bitcoin. So if you want good product, you have to use Bitcoin. On that note, you can go to SillDispatch.com/shop to buy a hat. I only accept Bitcoin. No fiat allowed. But I mean, I think it's even simpler than that, Marty. I think, well, first of all, I think Bitcoin wasn't the first attempt to try and solve this P2P permissionless cash problem or solution. The reason Bitcoin has been successful is because it increases in purchasing power over time, because it has that fixed supply element, because it incentivizes people to hold it. It incentivizes people to mine. It incentivizes people to build out the ecosystem around it. But at the end of the day, okay, your savings are increasing in value. They didn't actually increase in value if you can't spend it without permission, because how can you actually realize that value? How can you go out and buy soap or buy cows or buy a house or buy a car with that wealth that you've accrued if it requires permission to actually realize it? Then it's not your money. It's just an IOU. And this is why that it's two pieces of the same coin, right? Two sides of the same coin. You need both. You absolutely need both. And they're being built out in tandem. In the West, the investment use case, the savings use case is the predominant use case. But we see in places all around the world where it's actually the medium exchange use case is more dominant, where they actually want to hold dollars. They prefer to hold dollars. But when they can't make a transaction with a USD token or with dollars in another way, then they use Bitcoin because Bitcoin's actually censorship resistant and very difficult to stop or seize. So it all comes together. Argue about more important shit or more interesting shit, or just keep arguing about this, but really doesn't matter if you do. What matters is that we actually keep marching forward and build out this ecosystem and use the tools.
No, and I think this is a good opportunity to really highlight why we're doing this. Logan, pull up the Diligent Denizen tweet I put in there. Obviously, I'm sure you're all aware of the terrible tragedy that unfolded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, earlier this week with the mass shooting. I'm not going to comment on that. It's terrible. There is obviously a mental health crisis in this country that many people don't want to focus on, but in reaction to this, it seems like there are opportunists looking to thrust surveillance technology on us almost immediately. So Logan, if you just play the clip from the beginning, it's very short. I think it's like 30 seconds, but
correct. I am now about to launch Gideon, America's first ever AI threat detection platform built specifically for law enforcement. It scrapes the internet 24/7 using an Israeli grade ontology to pull specific threat language and then routes it to local law enforcement. It's a 24/7 detective. It never sleeps, and it's going to get us in front of these attacks.
Would it have picked up on this, do you think?
100%. I wish my program would already be up. We're not launching until next week. I've got a dozen agencies on board, Trace. I just unloaded a major Northeast agency with over 2,700 sworn. This is America's early warning system. Correct.
Yeah.
Dystopian as fuck.
Yeah. So we're wrapping this and save the children, prevent mass shootings. Here's AI 24/7 online detective to detect pre-crime and report it to authorities. So Minority Report coming real in real time.
You know, it's really fucked when they use Israeli grade as a selling point.
Israeli grade ontology. I don't even know what that means. I was trying to dissect the ontology part of that phrase.
You got to imagine his lawyers are freaking out that he said 100% guaranteed.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is like the Palantir playbook. They're rolling all this shit out. Like this is the reality that we have to be operating under. Pre-crime, knowing all your thoughts. I mean, we might as well jump to it since you jumped to that. I have it at the end of the list, Logan, but Anthropic just changed their terms of service. The major AI provider. Now they will be planning on saving all user chats for 5 years. And if you don't opt out by September 28th, they will actually be training the AI on your private chats, building profiles on users. This is another reason why things like Maple are incredibly important, private AI, secure AI, because this tech, like there's so much promise in LLM stuff, particularly open source LLM stuff. But once again, in the near term, the single biggest use case for it is surveillance and control. Like just building they're going to have very soon, they will have tools that will know how you think and what you think about better than you yourself, better than you actually realize yourself. If you're using these tools and using social and having digital connected lives in a way that you're not actually thinking about what you're putting out there. Very advanced profiles on people that can just be they're searched through with like natural language stuff, right? Tell me everyone who's interested in this thing that lives in this area, that works in this field, and just boom, just flag it all.
Yeah. Well, it looks like Anthropic's giving you an opt-out option. So you haven't.
Yeah, but supposedly. Yeah, I mentioned that, but supposedly it's like super dark pattern. Like it's really difficult to find and do and execute. I'm not an Anthropic user myself, but our buddy Sean, Bitcoin Park member is, and he said he tried to opt out. He posted on Nasir, tried to opt out. It was very difficult. And also, once again, like they're still saving your chats for 5 years. You can't opt out of that part. So who the hell knows? You're still trusting them that the opt-out toggle actually is an opt-out toggle and actually doing shit.
Yeah.
Anthropic frames the changes around user choice, saying that by not opting out, users will help us improve model safety, making our systems for detecting harmful content more accurate, less likely to flag harmless conversations. Rewrite another way. Like, if you say bad shit, we're going to snitch on you. Users will also help future Claude models improve at skills like coding, analysis, and reasoning, ultimately leading to better models for all users.
That's the worst part, is they gaslight you as they do all this shit.
Yeah.
It's like they just think everyone's retarded.
I've been to the people in my life. I've talked to a couple of high school kids and teachers, actually, that are diving into, apparently here in the Philly area, like the schools are actually leaning into it, at least some of them. Where I know a teacher who started last week and like the first day of orientation was teaching them how to use AI tools to better help create syllabuses and curriculum and find unique sources. And he had just started playing around with it. His mind was blown with ChatGPT specifically. The advice I gave him and anybody else I talked to about this is just literally use it as a tool to find information. Don't treat it as your therapist. Don't bring any like personal information about your marriage or your life as a parent or whatever into it. Just like, I need to find out what the GDP of Brazil was in 2017 or something like that. That's,
I
like
mean, what's better is just use Maple.
That as well.
Or self-host or use something that's actually private like Maple. Because I think most, at the end of the day, like if advice requires nuance, like most people fuck it up. But yeah, like you can like back your way into answers that don't dox too much information about you, but it's quite difficult. Most people won't. It's better if we just have private or self-hosted tools that are inherently private, and people use those instead. Because I'm telling you, Marty, like the overwhelming majority of people, you can like, when you listen to normie shows and stuff, they're just like putting their entire life into ChatGPT, just everything, uploading documents, medical records, like literally everything,
connecting their emails.
Yeah,
that's what Perplexity, they launched, I think it's called Comet Browser. And I downloaded it for literally 2 minutes because as soon as you open it, it's like, connect your Gmail and your calendars and all this. I was like, nope, I'm good.
No, yeah, there's some, by the way, if you haven't used Maple, you can search Maple AI in your favorite app store or go to trymaple.ai. Give it a spin. It's still a work in progress, but if you subscribe, it helps speed up development. And those guys are a two-man team. They're bootstrapping everything. I mean, 1031 is as an investor, but we're talking like small pre-seed check, and they're trying to do it on a very shoestring budget, which is pretty cool to see.
On this topic, some person, Maple's good, but what are your thoughts on Venice? Like Venice is,
have you ever used it? It's Voorhees's thing.
Yeah, but it's privacy, just like, trust me, bro, privacy. Like,
yeah, I don't think there's any actual privacy guarantees there. And it also relies on the shitcoin, I think, but I haven't used it, and so I can't really speak heavily on it. I see someone else mentioning Start9. Like, yeah, like I would like to see it become easier to self-host, and I think Start9 is going to play a key role there. Just self-host these open models. But I also think at the end of the day, most people are going to actually want like a signal type environment where you have secure enclaves in the cloud that give you the convenience of these hosted models, but with pretty strong privacy guarantees. I think that's probably the sweet spot in terms of user base. But it's always important that we also have self-hosted options, at least for power users or people that care more. But that will always be more inconvenient. Just onto your previous point, Marty, I mean, the dark pattern we're seeing with these AI tools is it's the first real, you're talking about Perplexity's browser. It's the first real time since the invention of the ad model where big tech has like a really, really strong incentive to just hoover up as much data on us as possible. And you got to just follow the incentives all the way down, right? Like if they can make a shit ton of money surveilling us, they're going to do it. And so you mix the ad model in with these LLM models, and then all of a sudden it just gets supercharged and just that much more evil. Pretty fucked up.
Very, very fucked up. And like on this note, everybody's hot and bothered with AI. It does feel a bit bubbly right now. It feels like there may be some deflation in the AI bubble. NVIDIA came out, I don't know if it was an earnings report this week or just a shareholder call. They revealed that 25% of their revenue, I believe year to date, is coming from one client out of Singapore.
Man,
it's probably China.
Just getting out of Chinese export because there's Chinese export restrictions. So they do it out of Singapore instead. I mean, look, I think there's obviously an insane amount of money floating around there. And it's so early. If I'm going to put my investor hat on, it's so early. It's really hard to figure out where that value is actually going to be captured. I mean, if you listen to people talking about AI shit and AI hype on the investing side, they're often talking about top line revenue. You'll hear ARR be repeated over and over again, annual recurring revenue. But they never talk about margins or how much profit they're making. So the real question is, where will the profit be driven? Who will capture that profit? And I think most people have no idea right now. I think you're kind of making a guess, and there's so much money sloshing around that you can basically bet that, you know, for every $10 that's being thrown into that space, maybe $1 is actually allocated to the right spot. Right. Just because there's so much and there's so little we understand in the value capture chain. So high risk, high reward, at least on the investor side with the 1031 hat on, we're being very conservative in that regard, particularly compared to like the traditional venture peers that we compete against, you know, the A16Zs, the Sequoias of the world. Yeah, I think there's probably going to be a reckoning there for a lot of people.
Valuations are insane in the AI space. But on this topic, you vibe coded something this week or last week.
Yeah, so as the freaks know, this cycle I've proclaimed that I'm not going to be making price predictions, which has just been killing me. So I had everyone else on Nostr make price predictions instead. I put my son to sleep and I was going to bed. Right before I went to bed, I sent out this Nostr note and I said, let's play a game. Guess the USD Bitcoin price a month from now, September 26th at 4:14 UTC. I said people had 24 hours to make a guess. I went to sleep. I woke up, there were 600 responses. I was like, what the fuck? Did not expect that. And I was like, how am I going to go through all these responses? So then I went on to Shakespeare.diy, which is maintained by Alex Gleason. I recently had him on Cyril Dispatch twice. Definitely go listen to those episodes. He's a fascinating individual. I'm very happy that we have him building on Bitcoin and Nostr. He formerly built out Truth Social for Trump. Just for a little bit of his resume. But in three prompts, I vibe coded this portal to track the predictions. It's not perfect, but it took about 15 minutes. I think it's pretty fucking cool. It originally showed when the prediction deadline is, but now that's passed. And Logan, if you just scroll down, it gives the current timer for when the price gets locked in. It shows the current Bitcoin price. And then it shows who is the closest to the current prediction. Now, one of the really cool things here is the Nostr notes themselves are the source of truth, and it doesn't require an API to interact with them, right? Because Nostr is an open data and comms identity protocol. So actually anyone can just vibe their own competing site to this to track the predictions themselves, and they can put their own filters on it. They can do whatever they want with the data. So some people are like, oh, you should do this, you should do that. It's like, yeah, go be the change you want to see in the world. And you can build your own tracker. And if it's better than mine, then we'll use that one instead. But it also got me thinking, with all the hype around Polymarket, and prediction markets are something in general that I've been particularly fascinated by and excited by for years now. Historically, the way prediction markets work is you put money on the line, right? And the more money you put on, the higher weight your predictive ability is treated in the market, right? So if you bet $100 on Trump winning the election, it matters less towards the overall prediction rate than if you bet $100,000. Well, what if we also like weighted in reputation? So if you use Web of Trusts, Webs of Trust and reputation, you could actually, and something open like Nostr, you could have prediction markets or prediction, whatever, maybe they're not markets, but you could have prediction tools that have a different perspective depending on who's viewing them, right? So if I think certain people have better predictive capabilities in global economics than Marty, when Marty views the predictions, he actually sees a different outcome than I do because he's has different weightings on different people. To me, that's pretty fascinating. So basically right here, like, oh, and the winner of this, the only incentive here is the winner of this gets 5,000 sats and street cred. So it's like, it was very low cost. 700 people responded, I think. My vibe coded website's only tracking 400 of them. Like, so there needs to, some work needs to be done.
Not you,
but I promise you, freaks, if you win, yeah, go on.
I was going to say, if you toggle from Primal to Nostr.band, it picks them all up.
Oh, awesome. There you go. You can switch relays, which is pretty cool. But I promise you, freaks, if someone wins and it's not on the price prediction thing and you're not a bot, like I'll pay out. And I actually don't think I needed the vibe thing to, I just thought that was fun, but to track it, because I also can be pretty positive that if someone guesses it right, they're going to let me know that they guessed it right. They're not going to go quietly in the night.
Do you have an alarm set where it will, like,
what do you mean? Will
make you aware, like, when?
Yeah, so the vibe,
4:14, that site, September 26th.
That's when the countdown ends, that the price will lock in on that site, and it should say who is the winner.
Boss.
The other funny thing is the prize was 5,555 sats, but I spent 27,000 sats to vibe code the tracker.
Well, that was the other cool thing.
I should have made the prize more.
I was just playing around. This is another great example of their pay per call. If you use Claude Sana 4, which is the pay per call version, I imagine you're paying with Bitcoin.
Well, yeah, this was pay per call.
Yeah.
And I paid with Bitcoin through Shakespeare.diy. So it's not a subscription. It's like, how big is the project? How many prompts do you do? Like I said, this was 3 prompts, but it kind of got the context window got a little bit big. I probably could have done it a little bit more efficiently. It was fun though. It was a fun little experiment. I will say, Marty, I think, you know what? Do you know what this means, right?
What?
Live RHR bet tracker is in
the we can easily
that's,
do it.
That's what's next. It's something we've dreamed of for a while. So we actually don't have that many outstanding bets right now, but we'll make the live RHR bet tracker and then we'll escalate our betting to fill it up a little bit.
Leave two.
We have
it's because they
yeah, you're gonna pay me for bit bonds. That's it. That's the only one.
Yeah,
I've been on a winning streak lately since my wife told me to stop betting on mempools.
Speaking of betting on mempools is probably wiser than betting on shitcoins if you're an endowment. The University of Chicago blew their endowment on shitcoins. The story came from the Stanford Review. You have a competing university calling out University of Chicago.
It's pretty fucked up because they're like, in the article, they're like, University of Chicago has like teeny weeny endowment compared to Stanford.
Let me find the good juicy part here. We're requesting that all university researchers working on federal grants temporarily suspend their non-personnel spending on federal grants as much as possible during this period of substantial uncertainty. For example, do not make any additional spending commitments. Purchase new supplies or equipment, start new experiments, embark on funded travel, etc. So this was an email that University of Chicago sent out to all their grant recipients, which I guess started a trail of questions of why are we stopping these grants? What's happening here? Which led to basically the unveiling of the fact that University of Chicago went heavy into shitcoins in 2020, I believe. And you're sort of, they're like backing into the conclusion that they're down big on shitcoins because the University of Chicago doesn't disclose investment performance or allocations by asset class, make it difficult to pinpoint exactly what went wrong. However, its target allocations reveal its ideal allocation to private debt and absolute return investments, including alternative assets like crypto, fell from 25.5% in 2020 to 20% in 2022. Hinting at a rout in risky alternative investments. But beyond the conspicuous crypto failure, UChicago's endowment returns are abysmal. From 2013 to 2023, UChicago's endowment returned just 7.48% annualized versus 12.8% for the stock market and 10.8% for Ivy League schools. This is the Ivy and Stanford shitting on UChicago.
I'll say we didn't talk to the UChicago team specifically, but with our 1031 hats on, we've had a lot of discussions with various endowments, and we've had the privilege of partnering with a few, and they were getting just whole hog hit by all the crypto VCs, and a lot of them went down the wrong path there. And it was always a hard conversation to have because they were promised, you know, too good to be true returns. They didn't really know better. And we're starting to really watch that, basically watch what we said privately and publicly on the show kind of play out among all these investment committees. I think I've talked about it in the past, but like usually someone doesn't invest with you when you tell them you think they've been scammed. But I think like 4 years later when they're like, oh shit, we were, and those guys were right. Some trust can get built up there. So I think pain's probably the best lesson, and it's unfortunate to see, you know, it happen to an esteemed education institution such as University of Chicago.
No, it's funny. Going and pitching a lot of these endowments, they'll look at us like we're crazy because we're focused on Bitcoin only at 1031, and they say, you're not diversified. We need to diversify. How do you know it's going to be Bitcoin? And it's like, been around the block, seen it. Focus is key. And if you price any other asset in Bitcoin over a 5 to 10 year period, it's going down significantly. You are. And it's ironic too. So for any of you institutional investors, whether on the endowment, the pension, family office side, listening to this, a lot of these institutions have no exposure to Bitcoin. They get bamboozled by these crypto VCs. They go all in and they're fed the lie of pure diversification, where really they're all concentrated on highly speculative crypto projects. And a lot of those crypto funds have no exposure to Bitcoin, spot Bitcoin, or the companies building out infrastructure for Bitcoin. So a lot of these institutions think they have exposure to crypto, which they do, but they have no exposure to Bitcoin, which is just a compounded loss. In terms of missing out on the upside of Bitcoin and the Bitcoin ecosystem. And
yeah, so they're like, they're wrong on the, they're wrong on the diversification lie to begin with. And then they're not actually even diversified.
Yeah. I won't say who, but I'm having flashbacks to a call where Matt had to politely explain stacks to an institution.
I did like the deep breath sailor meme, you know. I read that white paper so others didn't have to.
I set you up for that one too. I was like, Matt, why don't you take this one?
Matt's our internal stacks expert.
Yeah, this is
that group didn't invest.
No.
They didn't
like what
we had to say.
They don't like when you say, we think you made the wrong decision and you're not diversified. But here's a perfect example. Like a lot of the crypto bros are pitching Web 3.0, Web 2.0 is lame. We got all these diversified blockchains. We've been saying it for years. A real Web 3.0 is really just combining open source protocols in novel, creative, unique ways to get the censorship resistance and distribution necessary to produce in a particular use case. And we have this on the list this week. I didn't know about it till before we hit record. I was reading through the GitHub page, but this DTAN server, a distributed torrent archive on Noster, self-replicating torrent index built on Noster protocol, which is an incredible example of combining open source protocols, file sharing protocols, and Noster communications protocol. No blockchain necessary.
Yeah, so this is, so Kieran of Zapstream, this is one of his side projects. Looks awesome. I haven't run it yet, but I love the concept. Basically, if you've ever used torrents, it's hard to find like a reputable index on which torrents are good torrents and which torrents are not as useful or poor quality. Torrents specifically have kind of developed like their own little ecosystem where you have like private clubs that are invite only that tend to have the best index lists. And then you have stuff like Pirate Bay and the more open ones that are kind of filled with a bunch of trash that are hard to sort through and have ads and stuff to monetize. So the dream here is that you'd have distributed torrent indexes with webs of trust built into it, right? So without private groups and without invite-only kind of situations, you're able to like sort through all the noise and find the signal and find the torrent files that you want. Torrents are already, you know, proven tech. They're great for distributing large files in a trust minimized way. And yeah, Noster can help with the distribution and the reputation concerns that just aren't solved by torrents natively.
Yeah. And I'm sure they thought about it, but you can easily, and we've taught, this has already been implemented in BitTorrent, but never really got popular, but putting a Bitcoin paywall in front of a file to help incentivize people to seed certain files and keep them running.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm like, I like the idea of bounties more than paywalls.
That's a good one. Hey, I've got 1,000 sats for anybody who will find me
the hash of this file.
Yeah.
Like I have the hash of a file. I need this file and I will pay for it. So the reverse incentive.
I like that.
And we are building that out on Noster with Blossom spec, which I'm pretty excited about.
Yeah.
But you can do it with torrents too.
Yeah. All right, we hit everything on the list.
Nice. We got our tight hour that you requested. Tight hour.
While everybody's fighting over Medium Exchange, store of value, we're going to try and bring you the signal. And while everybody else is focused on paper Bitcoin summer, I will say there's a lot of good building going on in the space that really brings Bitcoin back to its cypherpunk roots and is trying to ensure that the protocol is sufficiently distributed. Had a really good conversation with Tyler Stevens from the space in Exergy earlier this week. So just pulling up the tweet here, but I think they're doing really cool things to bring mining to the world of heating, industrial and residential heating. And so what you're seeing here on screen is a prototype that they've built at the space in Denver, which is a Bitcoin co-working and event space that you should go check out if you're ever in Denver. I haven't been yet, need to go, but it was pretty cool talking to him how they built this and the potential for mining to replace home heating systems. Mining machines are just heaters at the end of the day. And I think what was most inspiring and made me incredibly optimistic about this conversation is that I think we're getting to the point of ASIC commodification where we're reaching the physical limits of the efficiencies that the ASICs can hit in terms of joules per terahash, where it seems like mining is destined to go back into the home in one way or another. And I think this heating use case is a perfect vehicle to bring mining back home. So I'm actually incredibly bullish on the long-term potential of sufficient geographic hash rate distribution and hash rate ownership because of applications like this. And it's just really cool to see that Tyler, I've met him, and we met for the first time in Nashville at the beginning of this year, but I've seen him two or three other times at conferences across the country, most recently in Georgia at the Proto event. But this was the first time I heard his background. Like, he was working for a defense contractor, quit his job, decided to go all in on Bitcoin mining and heat reuse. And it's really cool to see him in the space building out Exergy, put his money where his mouth is, walk.
I mean, on the topic of real Bitcoin fall, as we phase out of paper Bitcoin summer, I'm having the boys from Frost Snap on Scylla Dispatch today. I think I said 1900 UTC. It's 2100 UTC. I'm usually good on my UTC map, but 5 p.m. Eastern time. They have a new hardware wallet that's coming out that uses Frost.
Oh, you have it on you.
That is, it's like Human Centipede. So it has USB ports. And then you plug it into your phone, and then you make a multi-sig by plugging them into each other. They got cool little screens on them.
I'm sure they appreciate you calling their product the Human Centipede of Bitcoin wallets.
Well, it's Bitcoin Centipede is what it is. It's Bitcoin Centipede, but it's supposed to make multi-sig very easy to use, especially in a mobile-first environment. So I'm pretty excited to talk to them about that. All these different tools to make self-custody Bitcoin easier, Bitcoin as freedom money easier. I think that's how we win, is like making that ecosystem more robust, making the education more robust, increasing the user base on that front. So like less complaining on socials and more like actually doing things that change things, is the way.
And then on the Frost Snap, like, I think it's a really cool invention, I guess you could say, or a really cool product in the sense that like it makes multi-sig tangible because you need them connected, right, to get the Frost threshold to actually sign a key. And there's something intuitive.
I think they Bitcoin Centipede for, well, I'll ask them. We'll have this conversation later, but I think it's just for setup. I think you can, like, the coordinator is the phone, right? So if you have like one in your office, one in a safe deposit box, and one at your home, I think you can individually plug them into Sign.
Yes.
Yeah. But when you're doing the setup.
You have to plug them in though, right? To Sign, I believe.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, they use USB-C, so it just plugs right into the bottom of the phone. But to set it up, you set it up by Bitcoin Centipeding them together. Yeah. Pretty cool.
Did you ever watch that movie? I never watched Human Centipede.
No, but I saw the South Park about it.
I did too.
No, I'm not going to watch that fucking movie. It was a creepy fucking movie.
All right. I'm going to get back to my new chaotic life, which is great chaos. Yeah, it's been a good week.
More children.
If your margin long MicroStrategy, maybe it's not a good week for you, but, you know, maybe we stay humble, stack sats, and keep making babies. That's the simple life, you know?
That's how we win. Oh, on that note, my favorite PSYOP of all time, I think, is huge congratulations to T-Swift and Kelsey for getting engaged. Marty, they're going to get married. They're going to have four linebacker children, and they're going to bring in the next great American generation. We're going to reverse the birth decline. GDP is going to go through the roof. T-Swift is going to save us all.
Or is it going to end up like Tom Brady and Giselle, where in like 20 years, T-Swift dumps Travis Kelce and starts hooking up with their jiu-jitsu instructor? Look, that's a possible timeline as well.
Look, as long as we have 20 years of increased birth rate, increased marriages, then the PSYOP was successful. It doesn't matter what happens after that 20 years.
It's true. Be kind to people out there. Be kind. There's a lot of vitriol out there. I mean, their whole reaction. No, I won't even get into it. Just be kind to people.
Did you see Phoebo's comment in the YouTube on that note? Just vomited in my mouth. look, I think what you meant to say is thank you, T Swift. Thank you for saving us all. And I see Elle in the chat. Giselle has many babies. So thank you, Giselle.
Yeah. Thank you, Giselle. I think she's pregnant again with a new guy.
I do not follow. But
while we're on sports ball, Kyle Schwarber hit 4 home runs last night. It was pretty sick. Shout out to Kyle Schwarber. Thank you, Chicago. I'm the Philadelphia.
There you go. Well, love you, freaks. Love you, Marty. Stay humble, stack sides.
Peace and love.
Okay.